All right. Why don't we go ahead and get started with all of the introductions? And Irene, if you would press star 2 when you join us, that would be great. So again, welcome and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us for today's call. I'm very excited about it. It is Creating a Welcoming Environment for Native Americans and Latinos. If you need access to CART for today's call, you can go to the April website at www.april-rural.org and follow the link on that homepage. Today's materials are also available on that page for download and were sent out with a reminder for this call. If you're having any trouble accessing anything, you can always email me at mary.olson, O-L-S-O-N, at mso.umt.edu, and I can send you the links and materials. Today's call will be recorded, and the audio recording and transcript will be available online at our website under the audio conversations tab following this call. During today's conversation, if you would like to add to the topic from your experience or ask any questions, please press star 2 on your phone to raise your hand so that I can make your line live. Once your question has been answered, please press star 2 again to lower your hand. When I unmute your line, the moderator will state, "Your line has been unmuted." That is your cue to go ahead and begin asking your question or joining the conversation. Please remember to evaluate our conversation on our website following the call. Again, that link is under the IO Conversations tab. Your feedback is really important to us, and it only makes us stronger as an organization. This IO Conversation is presented by the IONet, which is operated by the Independent Living Research Utilization Program, or ILRU, in partnership with APRIL, NICL, and Utah State. Support for this IO Conversation is provided by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Community Living. No official endorsements of the Department of Health and Human Services should be inferred. And without further ado, I would love to introduce you to your presenters. Today we have with us two very special presenters, Socorro Arroyo Merchan joined the Dale McIntosh Center team in 2002. She's pursuing a bachelor's degree in Spanish with a minor in English. Socorro conducts extensive outreach to the Latino community in Orange County and continues to provide direct services at DMC as the OIB program manager. I might have to have you tell us what OIB means when you start talking. and we also have with us today Eileen Tahani. And Eileen Tahani has worked in the disability field for 25 years, mainly in state and tribal vocational rehabilitation services. She has a bachelor's of science degree in education, emphasis in special education and rehabilitation. She's really enjoyed her work as a disability advocate with the tribe and is currently the director at Assist to Independence. So without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Socorro.
Hi, everyone. This is Socorro, and thank you so much for this opportunity. So I'll go ahead and start by answering your question, Mary, about OIV and what OIV stands for is Older Individuals Who Are Blind, also known as Title VII Chapter 2 Services. So I'll go ahead and get started and share some information. One of the things I want to share with everyone is a definition that I came across that I think will be helpful to talk about as we move forward. So this is a definition, a consumer definition of cultural and linguistic competence. And it was, it's part of a report that was produced by Tahara Good. It was back in September 7th of 2011. And I really, this definition of cultural and linguistic competence really resonated with me. So this is what it is. This is the definition. A consumer definition of cultural and linguistic competence. The services I need from a perspective I can relate to in a language I am comfortable with at a location I can get to. And so that was the definition from a consumer's perspective of what it means for services to be culturally and linguistically competent. Again, that was part of a report that was done by Cultural and Linguistic Competence in Centers for Independent Living, and that was in 2011. So that definition really resonated with me and what it means to serve our Latino community.
Manuel, I think we lost you.
Uh-oh. Can you hear me now?
Okay.
Let me turn up my volume here. So I wanted to share that with you because that kind of frames the piece that I want to talk about in regards to providing services to the Latino community, in line with what Eileen shared with us in regards to the learning objectives for this. So starting off with how to address communication and language. So providing material in Spanish that is culturally appropriate. Using interpreters that are not only Spanish speakers, but also bicultural. Using translators to convert English language materials into Spanish. Partnering with Latino-based organizations to outreach to the Latino community if staff at the Independent Living Center or at the organization are not Spanish speakers. So those are important factors to keep in mind, important details when providing services and creating a welcoming environment to our Latino community. Is that first point of providing, you know, mindful and respectful communication and language to our Spanish-speaking or Latino consumers. The next point that we said our participants would learn about is the importance of traditional greetings, introductions, and personalismo. So using respectful greetings when working with consumers, working with our Latino consumers, it's okay to address the consumer by their first name if that's something that they prefer. It may not seem to us natural or okay, but it is okay if that's the consumer's preference, consumer or member's preference. And then the last detail in regards to this objective is to be mindful of building rapport with our Latino consumers, which will take time. Since many times our Latino consumers, members, are not going to talk to strangers right away and share their struggles, their battles, their needs in regards to their disability. That's something that comes with time. I remember early on when I started, I've been with the Dale McIntosh Center since 2002, And early on, I felt that I needed to get through my intake. And I was not being mindful of taking my time and building that relationship and rapport with our consumers and our members, and taking into consideration that when I visit a Latino household, that it's important to just talk, to just have a conversation, and learn about the person. And I know that goes across cultures too, but definitely, especially in the Latino community, in the Latino culture. And traditionally, the next detail I want to talk about is that traditionally the needs of the person with a disability within the Latino community is taken care at home by the family. So again, going back to building that relationship with our Latino consumers is really important, because there can be or there is a resistance to asking for help. There is a resistance to asking for help, and that was something that I learned about more and more as I worked with our Latino community. And there's a really good report that came out of the World Institute on Disability in 2006, and it's Latinos with Disabilities in the United States, Understanding and Addressing Barriers for Employment. It's a really thorough report. And if you'd like more information, I highly recommend this report. It's fairly lengthy. It's about 71 pages, but it has some great information, some great data and statistics. Again, the report that I'm referencing is from 2006, and it's from the World Institute on Disability, and it's titled Latinos with Disabilities in the United States: Understanding and Addressing Barriers to Employment. And then the last objective number three that we'll address today is how to serve people with unconditional positive regard and respect. And that's so crucial. I really appreciate Eileen bringing that up. I know that's part of her PowerPoint, and that really resonated with me, because that's something that I noticed that we have in common, definitely between the Latino community and the Native American community, that Eileen pointed out, is that being respectful in providing sorry, I'm getting a little dry throat here. Respectful communication and positive communication, and leaving our own personal biases aside, putting them aside, so that we can provide the most culturally competent services to our consumers or our members.
Socorro, did you have more to add, or did you want me to open it up for any questions at this point?
How about we go ahead and open it up for some questions, Mary? That would be great.
Great. All right. So if anybody has questions, again, you can press *2 to raise your hand, or you can type it into the chat box at the cart. Doesn't look like we have any at this time. However, I do want to remind folks that at any point while our speakers are talking, you can press *2, and that will get you in the lineup. And Eileen, I also want to let you know that your line is now live. Oh, we do have just one question. Okay, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Kim from Washington State. And my question is, do you have specific cultural, anecdotal, inferences for us to know about? I mean, part of the, I appreciate the presentation, and for me, not coming out of the Latino community, I don't know what maybe some specific ways to, like, what things when you're doing developing a rapport with someone, what things are like off limits, like you should not start with this because it is considered offensive, you know, you should probably start with a conversation, having a conversation in maybe one of these three ways. I mean, that's what I was kind of looking for in of more in-depth kind of information. I don't know if you have that, but if you do, I would love to hear about it.
Can you hear me, Mary?
I can.
Hello? Okay. So I can give you some, kind of share with you some information from my personal experience. Definitely when going into or working with a consumer, you don't necessarily have to go into their home. That's just been my experience working through the OIB program. But a couple of details is that, you know, always addressing them in a respectful manner, first and foremost. Secondly, doing what we can to make the environment as comfortable as possible, as welcoming as possible. Of course, using the person's primary language, so having staff on board that speak Spanish is extremely helpful. And if they can relate to the culture also, that's extremely helpful. As far as specifics is just having a warm and welcoming environment in your center. Or if you're going into the person's home, being very mindful that we're now stepping into that individual's home and being aware of the time element that, you know, if we say that the appointment will take an hour, then kind of sticking to that, being mindful of that. But I know with our Latino culture, time kind of, for example, early on, I would call consumers to say, okay, I'm calling you. I'm from the Dale McIntosh Center, and I'm calling you to schedule an appointment. And the tendency is that, just come on by when you're in the area. And so that goes to kind of the Latinos culture concept of time, is that when you're here, you don't have to make an appointment. You just can kind of drop on in, which may not be something that we're comfortable with. So being aware of those details is helpful when providing services to our Latino community. I hope that helps.
Would you mind giving us one example of how at your center you have made it more warm and welcoming environment for Latinos?
Sure. I know one of the things that we've worked on here at Dale McIntosh is that we definitely have more staff that is representative of our service area. So Orange County has a high Latino community. So I would say we're about 28 staff at the center, and approximately two-thirds of our staff are Latinos and speak Spanish. And they're from, you know, different parts of not just Mexico, but throughout Latin America. So having those, you know, staff representatives so that we can then turn around and provide services to our consumers. So an increase in staff that are Latino, therefore being able to provide services in the consumer's primary language of Spanish.
Anybody else have questions? You can press star 2. I see here it says from the chat room, how do you know how to relate to the culture if you are totally unaware? Are there resources available that we can look at regarding various cultures? So, you know, I think the question really, I think people, Socorro, are looking for some real specifics of what are some things, tangible things, you know, if you could give them an example of three tangible things that folks could do to try to, you know, create this more welcoming environment, what would those be? And one of them being the staff, you know, are there certain questions that really help put people at ease, or something folks could say that might make make it a little better?
Yes, and so so inviting the member, the consumer, to share with you about their story, and so not only focusing on the services that you'll be providing, and the reason they're at their center is because they're going to access services because of a disability, but asking them about their journey and their story is helpful, and that helps establish that rapport. That takes time to build with the Latino community, because many times the person with a disability has been at home, whether it's an older adult or it's an aunt or an uncle, or it's a son or daughter or mom or dad. It's that the needs of that person with a disability have been met at home by the family. So understanding that and getting to know the person and the family is really important, because the concept of family overrides the individual. And then another detail would be understanding the difference between interdependence and independence, which goes to, you know, the family versus the individual. So interdependence is really central in the Latino community. It's about the whole family unit versus the individual person.
Thank you. I think that's so helpful. And Susan Mills from the chat room says, another thing is to make sure you're not there to try to sell them anything. Great.
Yes,
thank you. And that's all the questions that we have for right now.
Okay, thank you.
Socorro, would you like at this time for us to turn it over to Eileen, or did you have more points?
At this point, we can turn it over to Eileen, and then I'll come back in a bit, Mary, at the end of Eileen.
That sounds perfect. Thanks. All right. Eileen, please take it away.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Eileen Pohani, and I am director of Assist for Independence, which is located in Tuba City, Arizona, and on the Navajo Reservation. Assist for Independence is a fairly small center for independent living, and we serve our residents of the Navajo Nation, Hopi Nation, and the Southern Paiute Tribe. And we are small, but we travel all over the reservation areas, and we do have some border town areas that we serve also. Folks that are referred to us, to try to help all of them, regardless of where they're at, you know, with just the limited resources we have. But we try to help everybody who is referred to us. And I am a member of Navajo Nation. I was raised and born on the Navajo Nation. And I'm going to introduce myself in Navajo. Shay Eileen Pahani, and she said, our Black Falls is the area. So what I did was I introduced my four clans, which is my maternal, my mother's clan, my father's clan, which is the Bantu clan, and you also introduce your maternal grandfather's clan and your paternal grandfather's clan. So basically, another Navajo, basically you're telling them who you are in terms of your clans and where you're from. And it's a way of, it's an icebreaker in the form of letting other people know that you are a Navajo, and that you know your clan, you know your history, you know where you're from. And basically, Navajos never hardly ever move away from where they live, so that a majority of them are going to stay where they were raised or born, or they may move to, like if they marry, if it's a man and he marries, then he may move to his wife's area. But basically this introduction is an icebreaker, and it really breaks the ice and gets everybody talking together, and it means a lot to especially the elders who still understand that this is the way it is, a form of kinship, and it brings people together. So that's what that was. But with Navajo, with Hopi members, they do have clans. They introduce them, they do have clans, but to people they don't know, they will not identify themselves in that way, not by clan, but they will talk about the villages they're from, and they talk about, you know, what village they're from, maybe what villages their spouse may be from, and they talk about that. And the Hopis in general are very culturally traditional, and their ceremonies are very important to them. So that's just being aware and being respectful of their cultural tradition and ceremonial. Around ceremonial time, it's not a good time to go visiting, nor is that a good time to make appointments. So just being aware when it's not good to do so. That's the part about the clans and the cultural. Southern Paiute tribal members are living in and around the Navajo Reservation area, so a lot of them have taken the Navajo culture and sort of integrated. A lot of them speak Navajo. A lot of them won't identify by clans, just like Navajos, but they do have their own little reservation areas amongst the Navajo communities. So that's in general about the Navajo, Hopi, and the Southern Paiute tribes. Did anybody have any questions about that?
Again, if you have questions, please press star 2 or type in your chat box.
And
I just have one question for you. Sorry. Go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Kim from Washington State. I wanted to ask you, I know the Native American different tribes up here, it's considered somewhat disrespectful to look somebody right in the eye, and that way you're talking to a Native American person to keep your gaze down. It's not culturally appropriate. Is that the same with the Hopi, Navajo, and Paiute?
When we work with various tribal members, we don't find that as a very useful. Sometimes when talking to people, they don't like to really look at you. They'll keep looking down, but that's not the total, not all of them are like that. You know, it's just for some, it's just very uncomfortable for them to look at someone straight in the eye. So they'll, you know, they'll see that now and then, but it's not like all tribal members. It doesn't apply to all tribal members.
I have one more question from the chat. Doug is wondering, does the Navajo Nation give an elder tobacco when talking to an elder? Doug says he's Chippewa in northern Wisconsin.
I'm only going to talk about our service areas. When we do it, we don't. When we go out and visit elders, we do not give them tobacco. We basically go out to visit them about services in terms of independent living needs. You know, we do home visits basically just to survey, to see what their needs are in the home. What I can do is just continue on my PowerPoint right now.
Go ahead.
Okay. So on the fourth page, all tribal members, really, both Hopi tribe, Navajo tribe, Southern Paiute tribe, like to converse in their own native languages, and they find it easier. They like it. They like it better if a service provider speaks their own language and explains to them exactly what service they're providing. What we find as a Center for Independent Living is, on tribal and Hopi nations, the services that, such as assistive technology, and even a lot of different assistive devices that are needed by, people with disabilities, they have no knowledge of. A lot of them don't know what they are. So what it brings to me is we have to explain exactly what it is. Assistive technology is, what is assistive devices, what are adaptive devices, what are some of this. So you have to explain that and why are we providing those, but provide a reason why. And once they find out what it is, they're very grateful for it. I'm finding that there's a complete lack of knowledge around a lot of the services we do, but it makes you more aware that you have to explain more and talk more about why you're recommending this or that, and in the end they find out that they can live more in the independent living can be enhanced for them in their own homes and maybe even in their own communities. And they're very grateful for that once they find that out. And tribal members live in all types of conditions and different types of housing, various socioeconomic statuses. And because of that, that's where the unconditional positive regard comes in. Unconditional positive regard is a basic acceptance and support of a person regardless of what the person says or does, and where they live, you really have to just accept them for how they live, how they choose to live, because tribal members live in all various different ways, and if you walk in there with judgment in your eyes or you feel very uncomfortable and you're already not accepting them because of the way they live, they'll know. It's not good to go in there without that. You have to accept people for how they live and how they choose to live and how, because you're also dealing with people with various religious orientations. Meaning, we have people who say they are Christian, others who are traditional, others who are Native American church, others who are different other religions. So you have to serve them. You have to, in going in and doing your initial assessments, you have to get to know them and offer your services in context of what you know about them, being able to be respectful of all their religions, all their various conditions, the way they live, and be aware of their socioeconomic status, meaning how much money, you know, if they don't have much money, how are you gonna provide your services so you're not putting a lot of putting a lot of stuff on them in terms of what they can afford or can't afford. How can we make it so it's not such a huge cost, puts a huge cost on them so that they think they can't afford what you're bringing to them? How can you just be completely helpful in terms of, how can I help this person get what they need and really just go out, call out, and help them in that way. Sometimes it's not possible for us to help someone with everything, but we can also collaborate with other agencies, other service agencies to get them what they need, and we can work with them that way. And a lot of our tribal members, all tribes consider it impolite to just rush in and, you know, sort of provide, say something and say, we're going to give you this, and rush back out again. It's more acceptable to make time to introduce yourself and maybe have some little icebreaker conversation before you jump into talking about business. It takes some time, but that's what it takes to build that rapport with that person you're going to be helping. So when we go in, let's say to a Navajo elder's home, we introduce ourselves, shake hands. The shaking hand is universal in all tribes. You shake their hand and you introduce yourself, and they will introduce themselves, and they, especially the elders, they like to talk a little bit. And another thing is, a lot of our elders are home alone a majority of the time. So they like to visit some. And that's, you know, and that's what we do. We sit there and visit a little bit and talk about what it is. And it's like, you know more about them anyways. When you can talk to and sit with someone for a few minutes, you really get to know what their world is all about. So it's a very nice way to get to know someone. And so in working with all our tribal members, we have to accept the way their life and their everything, and we learn everything about them, find out what the difficulties are in their lives, and try to help them with everything. We don't go in thinking that we're going to only help them with one thing and leave. We actually have to find out what all the issues are, what are the problems, in what ways can we help with each one, and we try to work with that person, each person that way. And positive unconditional regard is also to serve people by setting aside our own personal opinions and biases, and get to know them and work with them, knowing what they have accepted, or the way they have gotten used to living. And we can't change that, so we just work with them according to what it is they want to get done in their own lives. And then because we serve Native people with disabilities, we have lived without most, a lot of these people have lived without most services for years. And some are frustrated, some are angry at lack of services on tribal reservations. But, and also people who may not understand what we are talking about because they've never heard of it. So we have to explain more. We might have to show them pictures. We might have to actually model what something does for them so they could learn to use it. So that's something we go in knowing that we have to do. We go into the homes knowing that's what we have to do to help them. And that was the last slide. Are there any more questions?
Yeah. So, again, go ahead and press star 2 if you have any questions. And I do have one from the chat. Mark says, I wonder how and if Navajo or Hopi clans are impacted by historical trauma and how that impacts their willingness to receive disability services or work with youth, and I'm adding this piece, or work with you since you are an agency that gets federal money.
They are Well, in terms of historical trauma, could you explain that a little bit more? So,
yeah, Mark, do you mind giving a little bit of an explanation of what you mean? While Mark is typing, I'll tell you, I mean, from my perspective, I've heard people mention this before, and it's the historical pieces of how Native American tribes were treated in history, you know, being put on reservations, how their land was taken, being sent to boarding schools. So just all the trauma that happened in the history of our joint past is kind of in general what I think it means. And I'll see if Mark has any additions.
Okay.
Doesn't look like he does right now, but based on that, do you have any thoughts?
I think the way that has historical trauma has impacted the tribal members is that just they've been removed. They were removed from mainstream society in terms of they don't have any. If they hadn't been removed, I think they would know a lot more about assistive technology and the things that they would need to know to help themselves be more independent. Because they were moved and put on reservations, I think the reservations have less services, less training around all these things that could have helped them. So now we're just trying to catch up in terms of becoming, helping people learn a lot more things to help them be more independent in their communities, not just in assistive technology, not just in adaptive aid or assistive aid, but also in services in terms of like mental health services, to learn to build coping strategies, coping mechanisms to deal with their symptoms or their disabilities, and being able to move forward to have more access to education and training and employment. And then not to mention there's less employment now too, but we are still moving forward to right now what I'm working on is doing a form of a system advocacy with our tribal leaders to talk to them about the new needs of people with disabilities in terms of employment and education and employment and training for people with disabilities, which we're behind. If we were outside the reservation, but we are because we're a nation in itself. We're moving to address that right now, and I think because of historical trauma, I think we're behind in a lot of areas. Any questions?
I do have another question. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Mark. I had asked the question regarding the impact of historical trauma and cultural genocide. I'm only in eighth Lakota Chippewa clan, never raised on the reservation, so I'm white, and going on the reservation doesn't. I'm not accepted on the reservation. I fully understand that. And at times there's a great deal of resistance because I'm not a Native American, because I haven't experienced the cultural trauma, the historical trauma that the tribes up in Minnesota and North Dakota have experienced. And I'm wondering if you have any insights or thoughts that might be helpful.
I even on our reservations here, I noticed that they do not really like it's more and more I think it's happening to where they do not like outside people coming in to tell them what to do or what not to do. They want their own tribal members to be the service providers, to be the ones that tell them how, you know, to be the, basically just be the service providers in all areas. And I think it's just, I think it's the same concept as people with disabilities, anything about us or for us, don't do it without us, you know, that type of concept. They like to see their own people being the service providers. But not necessarily somebody who grew up here, but they're still accepting of the ones, the tribal members who have left the reservation and grew up or lived somewhere else and came back. But most people I know of who have left the reservation and come back may have a problem speaking the Navajo language or the Hopi language. And I think that language is a very important part of working with your tribal members. So I don't know your language. I don't know if you know your language in terms of coming back to talk to people in your own language.
Yeah, you know, Chippewa is Ojibwe, and so it's, but there's differences in the areas as well. So, but I appreciate that. I think you answered it fully. It is an area that is very difficult for, I think, us as, and I would say as a non-Native American, I feel like I have to approach it very slowly and spend a lot more time building the relationship and the trust before we begin to go any further than that.
Yeah.
And this is Mary. I wanted to just touch on something Eileen said that I think is also really great advice, and it's not going in telling people what they should do. So, you know, I know, I am also a non-native, and I grew up in Montana on a reservation, and just really respecting that. I can sympathize, but I can't empathize. I don't know what it's like. But what I can do is lay out all the different options, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I don't know if that would be acceptable, Eileen, or not. But
yeah, even in my work, even in our work at the Center for Independent Living, we are unable to go in and just tell somebody, do it this way, do it that way. You know, we have do suggestions and say, do you want to do, you know, if you want to, this is how you can do it. Give them options. Give them decisions to make. They make the decisions themselves as to how they want to do something or if they even want to do it.
There's also just another comment from the chat room, and it says, boarding schools where children were taken away from their families resulted in those children not knowing how to parent. I'm not sure if you, I think Susan was just making a comment, or if you, you know, have any thoughts.
I'm a product of the Navajo Reservation Boarding School. I was in a boarding school from the time I was in kindergarten to until my eighth grade year, and but I think my experience was maybe different than other people because a lot of boarding schools are spread throughout the reservation, and some of them off reservation, I had a different experience in terms of I think I had a positive experience, but a lot of other people had negative experiences. And I mean, personally speaking for myself, I don't have any issues at all around my experience. I think it was later years that I had my experience than other people who had really negative experience, I think, had theirs maybe in earlier years. I enjoyed my boarding school days because I was in a boarding school, which in fact was to the city where I'm working now. So it was very positive in terms of I had dorm matrons who were pretty much good people. I mean, I did hear later years that there were not some good things happening there. And I'm very sure a lot of people were traumatized by those events that happened. But for myself, my experience was different than others. So mine was very positive. And I don't think there was a problem with learning how to, I learned how to interact well with others. I kept my Navajo speaking. My primary language was Navajo. So I learned English, and I think my experience in this boarding school, I think, really taught me good English and also, you know, kept my Navajo language. They didn't keep it from me, as far as I know, and this was in the 70s, so I, at that time, it might have been turning to where it was more positive, you know, where they didn't keep people from speaking. But I'm just speaking for myself. I'm sure there were other folks who had other people who had negative experiences.
Thank you. You know, I think what both you, I mean, and Socorro are saying is that there's a saying. It's called different, same struggle. And I think that with both of these different cultures, it's a lot of like how we as people with disabilities also really want you to see us as the individual. So even though we might have the same disability as somebody else, we might, you know, not need the same things, or we might not have the same experiences. And I think that's a good rule of thumb for any culture. Just all that we can do is, you know, try to learn. And, you know, we understand that you guys are telling us your experiences, and also, you know, everybody, I think that, you know, every individual is just that, an individual experience. So I just appreciate what both of you are giving to us today.
Mary.
Yes, please.
Oh, I wanted to chime in to, in regards to the comments you made earlier, and thank you for those words. They're appreciated. You're very welcome. In regards to the comments you made about living on a reservation and being able to say that you can understand, but you cannot empathize because that wasn't, you know, your experience, right? And you can provide options. And that's definitely something that is true with the Latino community, is that within the Latino community, you know, we have consumers that will relate. They may identify themselves as Latino, or they may identify themselves as Hispanic, or you know, the most inclusive term is that people will say I'm a Spanish speaker. And so know that I myself identify myself as a Latina. I don't know every single thing there is to know about my consumers who are also Latino, and whether they prefer, you know, one of the things we ask is, how do you identify? How would you like to identify? Are you Latino, Hispanic? And what does that mean to you? So, you know, it'll mean something different if a person is from Mexico versus they're from Cuba, or they're from El Salvador or Honduras. So being aware that it's okay, we're not going to know everything there is, but being aware of that is first and foremost really important. And then finding those spaces where we can meet and relate to one another, I think is really important, And I think the Latino community is very, anytime you try and you're not a native Spanish speaker, but you try and you say a couple of things, or you say hola, or gracias, or whatever it is that you may say to that Spanish speaker, that goes a long way. That really does.
Yes,
I
think that's the same way.
Yeah, it's the same way for Native tribal members, is just to learn, you know, how to say yate, you know, shake hands, yate, and then when you're leaving, how go on that, you know, that type of thing, real simple things. It does go a long way with them.
Hey, do you guys have any more of those nuggets and gems? So just how, you know, you talked a lot about how the little things make a big difference. Do you have some examples of some other little things that folks can maybe try?
I can't think of anything else. Just be respectful, especially for Hopi members. Be really respectful of their, when you're in their villages, where you should be and where you shouldn't be. There's places where only certain people are allowed to visit or walk, and then also, especially during their ceremonial times, and you don't interfere in those during those times, basically, and just be aware that you know, just be very aware of that. And we don't make appointments. We don't make appointments during those times because we know they're busy. And if they tell us, oh, I'm doing this, I can't do it that day, then we know that's what it means, is you're not going to be there. You're not going to rush them to say, hey, I need to get this done, you know. It's just to step back and let them, the same way with Navajo members, if they have a ceremony and they tell you, I'm going to be doing this ceremony, or I'm going to be busy with that from that to that, you let them do it. You don't rush them, or you don't demand that you get an appointment when you know that you shouldn't be able. It's respectful.
Thank you.
I think one thing that I would share is that when providing services to the Latino community, especially in the instance where it's their home visits or home appointments, which is the case, it's been my experience for the time that I've been here, is that the majority of the services that I've had the opportunity to provide have been in the home environment, is that I'm walking into their home and their space, and I need to be really respectful of that, and be flexible in regards to whether I'm going to meet with someone in their living room, on the porch, in the backyard, it's okay. And just to be adaptable and flexible in that regard. And also one thing that the Latino community, our consumers and members, do as a sign of appreciation or offer it's their way to say thank you, to offer you something. They'll offer you a cup of coffee, a bottle of water, and they want to give you something to show their appreciation and thankfulness. And so, be open to accept that.
Again, folks, if anybody has any questions, you can press star 2. And that will raise your hand, or type something in the chat box. I'll be looking at those. And while we're waiting for the queue, I'm sorry, I'm just so piqued and interested in this topic. I had just a couple more questions myself while I'm waiting for the queue. I guess my first one is that you're both talk a lot about going into people's homes, and I'm curious if do you find that people of these different cultures don't come into the center themselves, and that's why you've had to switch that model, or why would you say that is?
I'll go first on that one. This is Ivy. A lot of our families live, we're very rural. The Navajo Reservation is very spread out. Our communities are miles and miles apart. And a lot of our the people we visit, people with disabilities, might live at the farthest, maybe 2 to 3 hours away. And the nearest one might be the next community, which might be 15 to 20 miles away. So majority of our people, we don't make them come in because a lot of them may not have transportation. They may not have the money to buy gas to come here. So we go out to see them. And I really do believe as an independent living provider, services provider, you have to connect with the people in near their homes or in their home, actually, to help them better, to give them the services that they need. So we just go out and see them in their homes. Or like Socorro said, she said, you meet with them where they want to meet with you, if it's in their yard, or if it's in, maybe they don't want to meet with you at their home, but maybe they want to, their first meeting might be at the local meeting place, which could be a chapter house or maybe a restaurant or something, just for the first meeting until they get to trust you and get to know you. Then they might invite you to your home, but not all of them are like that. The elders, you know, will just welcome you into their home right away. So it's different for the people you see too, so I agree with her on that. You meet with them where you meet, where they want to meet with you. But a lot of it, we have to go to them, I believe, to give them the best service. Thank you.
Definitely, and this is Socorro. And so my experience providing home appointments and home services with our consumers is that through the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, the OIB program, the methodology is that you work with the individual in their home environment. That's where the independent living skills training piece is going to be used. So going into the person's home and working one-on-one with them in their home environment is our approach. And it really does allow for, I think, really getting to know that member, that consumer, in their environment and being able to provide them options, and then they get to decide, okay, this is the way, this option is the better option for me. But ultimately, they decide what that looks like for them. But historically, the services are provided in the home environment, the independent living skills training, the information and referral, the assistive technology, all that takes place in the home.
And again, if anybody else has questions, please press *2 to raise your hand. I do have one more, if you don't mind. I'm wondering, you know, we all know that the ultimate and best case scenario would be to have somebody on staff who identifies with these cultures. However, you know, in the meanwhile, while folks are trying to work towards that goal, what's something that they could do to learn more? So, for example, is there a cultural council or something, somebody that folks could meet with to learn some of those basic hi and goodbye words, or to learn a little bit more about the culture of the specific tribe in their area? And for Socorro, is there any, you know, suggestions of places you have where people could learn, you know, a little bit more about the culture of the of folks in their region?
This is Eileen. No, there really isn't anything except maybe as a language, learning the language. There are phone apps and computer apps on computers that you can access to learn basic Navajo. And this is, that's just basic of Navajo, to say hello, goodbye, you know, maybe, you know, other little words that you learn that could help you begin to, you know, to converse with someone. And at least they, you know, some of the little words, like how to say hi, how to say goodbye, how to say what is that, or, you know, maybe, but other than actually learning how to go in and talk to families, you know, they're welcome to call us here at the center and, you know, talk to us if they, if someone's thinking of, you know, thinking they want to learn more. And then there's also people, there are websites that the tribal members have, different tribal members have set up. And I see those, and they talk about tribal members, and some of them actually have like Canadian have set up videos like on YouTube, and they give little lessons on the tribal members, you know, how to you know, different things you might want to learn. And I'm very sure that some of those same people will probably be able to train on some of the ideas in person if they were asked to, because they put up these videos on YouTube, and also that people can watch to learn more about the tribes.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
And then that's part. That is true. YouTube is there's a wealth of information there. My other suggestion would be is to reach out, like, if you are wanting to learn more about creating, you know, a welcoming environment, your independent living center, your organization, and you may not have staff on board that are Spanish speakers, that are Latino or Hispanic, then reaching out to one of your community partners that, for example, in Orange County, we're partners with Latino Health Access. So reaching out to those partners, those community partners whose focus is to serve the Latino community. And there definitely are many in California, and I'm sure there are across the United States. But if there's a prominent organization or group in your area that exists to serve the Latino community, then reaching out to them for some possible in-service is helpful. Maybe looking at your local, you know, whether it's your local hub of information for all the independent living centers in your state. In California, it's the CFILC, the California Foundation for Independent Living Centers. They usually have some good information. So those would be my two suggestions is YouTube, your local ILC hub in your state or in your region, and then reaching out to a community partner whose focus is providing services to the Latino community.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you both. So again, I just wanted to give another quick shout out for, if anybody else has questions, you can press *2 to raise your hand or type it into the chat. I just wanted to go back and clarify, Susan Mills mentioned when we were talking before about boarding schools, just saying that some people's experiences were that those children who are now adults were beaten for speaking their language, and Christianity was forcibly put on them, and because of such, they lost a lot of their traditional ways. So that was just a clarification on something we were talking about earlier. And I think, again, like Eileen said, everybody's experiences, I think, are probably so individual. So again, *2, and I also just wanted to mention one more time about evaluation. If folks don't mind evaluating this call, and the transcript and the audio recording will be available on the website following. I'm not seeing any questions at this time. I'll give folks a couple more moments to give them an opportunity. But I again just wanted to say thank you again to both of you. I'm so so honored that you both agreed to be on this call. I know you're very busy, and I think that it's all about the conversation and the fact that we're having these conversations now and that we're all trying to learn a little bit more. It makes me very hopeful, I think, for the future of independent living. And I guess with that, do any of you have anything else that you wanted to share? And also, I just wanted to mention one more time, Socorro, you mentioned something about interdependent living. And while you're giving your closing thoughts, I was wondering if you could just talk a little more about that. I think it's such an interesting, distinction or concept.
Sure. So interdependence is definitely a concept that's more in line with the Latino community because it's part of the family unit, and the family dynamic is that, the family is there to support one another, not only the immediate family, but the extended family. And from, aunts and uncles and the mother and the father and the kids, they're all interdependent on one another to help one another and to help the elders. It's not common that you'll see an elder from a Latino household transition to assisted living. The thought is that it's about that interdependence and that person, the elder will stay at home and the children, the grandchildren and their children will now help take care of them or take care of them. So they'll go live with them. So it's just that at the core is that interdependence and not so much the independence that I think that as an independent living center, I know that, that's at the core of who we are. So being able to kind of express that to our Latino community to say, I can understand where you're coming from, and this is what I can offer you, and then they make their choice. So we're presenting options. So thank you for this opportunity, Mary.
Thank you. Lee, did you have any closing thoughts?
And just something to add to what the Coro is talking about. And tribal members, there are families that have a lot of interdependence, but there are others that don't, I guess they don't really know or they don't understand quite how that being independent, especially if it's a child or a child or maybe a person with severe disabilities who is being taken care of by the family, such as a child with DDD disability or severe intellectual disability, they don't understand that that this person still can become independent and learn to be not because we're telling them that he or she needs to learn to be independent, but also to let them know it's because who's gonna take care of this child or adult child once they are no longer there in terms of who's gonna care. And a lot of them don't have that. That's never been brought up before, so they begin to understand that maybe it's better for them to learn to be independent through the various services that we have through the Center for Independent Living, such as either through assistive technology or more IL skills training, or just that there's a variety of services that can be provided to the families so that they can be more, not have to worry about where their child or their adult child is going to go to once they are not there to care for them anymore. So I think that the they are interdependent, but in a way they need to learn to be independent too. But again, we give them choices to do that also. And I believe our sinners are there, are here, but basically we're here to help families understand that. And so far, I believe we're making some headway with some of the families that we've been talking to. And this is new to them because previous, I don't know how, I guess just the lack of services on the huge reservation. It's just something that's not known by everyone. Yeah, and thank you for this opportunity too, Mary. I was very glad to be able to talk to everyone, given the time to talk to everyone.
Well, thank you again, both of you, and we really appreciate it. And, you know, I think that that's all that we have for today. So thanks, folks, out there in teleconference land for joining us today. And please tune in on May 31st when we'll be talking about diversifying your funding at your Center for Independent Living.